Welcome back to The People Show. Josh Elliott Wolf, Dominic Tremati, coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Keep your texts coming in. 650-650, the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, three stores to serve you in Lander on Bridge Street. Dunbar Lumber Express at Lander Center or Arbutus in Vancouver. Online at DunbarLumber.com. We go to the phone line. Matt Heumann, senior editor at VSiN, the sports betting network, and host of VSiN Tonight, joins us. Thanks for taking the time, Matt. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Ready for the big game tonight and then the Masters later this week.
Yeah, I'm very pumped for the Masters. We've got a whole like golf group here at the station, so we're all getting into it more and more every year. We're all getting older together. It's great. But yeah, looking forward to tonight's game. And so it's kind of the two favorites, Purdue and UConn. And sometimes this happens. Sometimes we see more of an upset along the way. Do you prefer when it's like, hey, two heavyweights in the final, or would you rather see, hey, maybe UConn and then an underdog on the other side?
Well, we had that last year. We had UConn and San Diego State on the other side, right? An underdog that was a longer shot from the Mountain West Conference. And I think most people wanted to see the two heavyweights go head-to-head this time. When UConn's trying to go back-to-back for the first time since 2007 when Florida did it, you want to see UConn have to go through a powerhouse team in the championship game to achieve that. And we're getting that tonight because, really, like Dan Hurley said Saturday night, the best two teams in the country the last 2 years have been UConn and Purdue, and then UConn has been untouchable in the tournament. 11 straight wins, 11 straight covers against the spread, and no win by fewer than 13 points. So let's see if Purdue can show up tonight and have more than a puncher's chance and give the Huskies a game. I think they can, and I'm looking forward to it tonight. I've got UConn winning this game 72-67. I want to say a 5-point game. And I'll tell you why I think UConn's going to maybe pull away a little bit late. But 72-67, if I hit the exact score, can I get a gift card from Dunbar Lumber?
Yes. We'll be on it immediately.
Okay, cool.
Matt, where would you rank UConn historically if they pull off the back-to-back title? Not just because they pull off the back-to-back, but because, like you just mentioned, their dominance. It's been done 7 times historically, the last time 06-07 by the Florida Gators.
Yeah, it's hard to put all that stuff into context. It's, because those UCLA teams, the 60s and 70s, weren't challenged a whole lot. And then you got Duke in the early 90s, which is one of the better teams in college basketball. I actually thought the UNLV team, which I was a big fan of, in 90 and 91, that won it in 90 and then went to the Final Four unbeaten in 91, was one of the greatest teams of all time. But they blew it in the Final Four, and they lost as a 7.5-point favorite to Duke, and the Blue Devils then went back-to-back. UConn's had some great teams. Florida, I mean, it's probably a top-five, team in terms of college basketball history. But I think what impresses me the most is that Dan Hurley replaced three really good players from last year's team. And you're talking about Adama Sinogo, who's most outstanding player of the tournament, who's just a beast in the low post. Donovan Klingon came off the bench last year, which a lot of people forget. He was a backup big man. So you had to replace Sinogo, Jordan Hawkins, who was a first-round NBA pick, and then Andre Jackson, who was the best defensive guard on the team. You had three studs that you kind of had to replace from that team. They come back with a different-looking cast, and they look just as good this year. So I don't know how you put it in the historical context. One of the great, probably one of the five greatest college teams of all time in terms of back-to-back years. But I'm really impressed what Dan Hurley's done with this. And, also UConn, since 1999, if they win tonight, that would be 6 championships. That's been the best basketball program in the country in the last 25 years, and it's really not even close.
You mentioned Donovan Klingon, and how much of tonight's game is going to come down to that Klingon-Edie matchup at center?
Well, that's going to be a key matchup for a lot of reasons. And one is that Purdue thrives on feeding the ball to Zach Edie in the low post. A lot of times he can back a smaller guy down and score at will. And if he gets doubled, he kicks it out to wide open shooters. Well, UConn's not going to have to double Edie like at most other teams. So Edie is not going to have that option, I think, as much to kick it out to those open shooters. He's not going to be able to bully Klingon as much, push him down under the basket. So this is going to be the biggest challenge that Edie has faced. Also, Samson Johnson, the backup big man for UConn, is another player they can use to help defend Purdue's 7'4", 300-pounder. So I guess when you break it down, you would say the big men might cancel each other out, even though Edie's much more of a scorer than Klingon is. I actually think what's going to decide this game tonight is not going to be the big man necessarily. It's probably going to be how Purdue's guards shoot it, because Purdue is a better three-point shooting team than UConn. That's one spot where you actually have an advantage. There's always a fire truck driving by when you talk on the phone.
Always.
Because that's got to happen like every time.
So, it's all good.
Purdue has an advantage as a 41% three-point shooting team. UConn has had some games in this tournament where it hasn't shot the three well at all. 3 for 17 against Illinois, 3 for 22 against Northwestern. If the Huskies are a little bit off shooting tonight and Purdue's guards are knocking down their threes, we're going to see a hell of a game and maybe an upset, but I think that's what's going to determine tonight's game.
So Purdue last year, we all know they lost to a 16 seed. Virginia's the only team to ever lose to a 16 seed and then come back the next year to win it all. Purdue can do it tonight. Make the case for Purdue. What's it going to take to beat this powerhouse UConn team?
Yeah, I remember the 2019 situation well. Virginia had to pull two rabbits out of the hat to win, including an overtime game against Texas Tech in the final. One thing Virginia did not have to do is go through UConn.
Yeah.
To get total redemption, right? So I think Purdue's got a much tougher challenge here tonight against UConn to get total redemption. I think Purdue has achieved a pretty good measure of redemption just by getting this far and getting to this game after that really embarrassing, humiliating defeat a year ago. I would say that if Zach Edey gets Klingon in foul trouble and he can be highly productive against UConn's big men, then that's going to make a big difference in the game in terms of him being able to kick it out to shooters. And I thought, and I wasn't surprised, that actually Purdue played pretty poorly against NC State on Saturday, because they had that grinder, that really tough game against Tennessee, then celebrated all week after making the Final Four. Then you have a situation where you're putting these teams in a football stadium in Phoenix. You got 74,000 fans in there. You have poor shooting background. It could be a little unnerving to players who haven't been in that situation before. So I wasn't surprised. That game was sloppy. I would say that if you're being an optimist, you'd say Braden Smith, the point guard, and some of Purdue's players that didn't play so well in that game, maybe they got their bad game out of the way and they're going to play their A game tonight. But it's still a lot to expect. When you look at the matchups, UConn's got guards that are basically 6'4", 6'5", 6'6". Purdue's guards are a little bit smaller and not as physical, and I think that's probably where UConn wears them down in the second half and wins the game.
Matt Eumanns joining us, senior editor at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, host of VSiN Tonight. What do you think of the John Calipari move to Arkansas, leaving Kentucky?
Well, when I heard it last night, I got to tell you, when I heard it last night, I thought it was what? Is he crazy going to Arkansas? But then you start to put the puzzle pieces together. You know, Arkansas's biggest booster, one of them, is a close friend of Calipari's. And, hey, let's face it, he was underperforming at Kentucky. He was unhappy there. The fans were unhappy with him. I really thought after Kentucky lost to Oakland in the tournament, it was time to part ways. Cal needed to move on. Kentucky needed a new coach. The timing of it was a little bit odd because Arkansas had whiffed on a couple other big-time candidates it was going after, and then said, hell, let's take a swing at Cal and see if we can get him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously he was looking for a way to get out. So here's the thing about Calipari. He's not a great X's and O's coach. He's a hype man. He's a motivator. He's a recruiter. He's going to bring in a ton of talent. And a lot of times he can win games because he's got more talent than you. That Kentucky team this year scored 117 points against Alabama in late February. That team was ultra talented. But then you get into the tournament and they flopped. So I think it's probably a good move for both sides. It's going to be positive for Arkansas, and it's good for Kentucky to turn the page and find someone else.
Matt, last one for you before we let you go. Iowa, South Carolina on the women's side drew a record audience on TV of 18.7 million. What do you attribute to the wild success of the women's game this season? And does the departure of the draft class this year set up for some regression in viewership next season?
I don't think there's any doubt there's going to be regression. You know, a lot of people are getting carried away thinking the women's basketball is so popular that it's going to continue to ride this wave. Caitlin Clark had most of the reason for that. If you look at the viewership in the millions in the two women's Final Four games, the Connecticut-Iowa game was double what the South Carolina game was on the other side, and that's mostly because of Caitlin Clark. And when she's gone, you know, you always need stars to promote.
Yeah.
People need a reason to tune in. And if you don't have stars to promote in the women's game, you're going to struggle. And she was the biggest star there is, so we'll see where the women's game goes from here. You have to develop stars, and she was like the Stephen Curry of women's basketball, right? So I'm not as optimistic as some that wave is going to continue to grow for women's basketball, even though I do like it. I think she is a big reason for it.
Hey, Matt, appreciate you taking the time. Actually, before we let you go, you mentioned Masters this week. Do you have any picks or predictions ahead of Thursday?
I'll tell you who I like is kind of under the radar, Tony Finau. And I bet him at 55-1 at Circus Sports in Vegas a couple weeks ago. Finau's played well at Augusta in the past. And I guess when you're betting it, you want to look – we got to look beyond Scottie Scheffler, right? If you want some rooting interest in Scheffler, maybe bet him to finish top five, top ten. I don't know. I can't bet him at 5-1 to win this thing. I don't think his putting is good enough right now for me to say, oh, yeah, I'm going to take Scottie Scheffler at 5-1. I did look at Finau at 55. Maybe Brooks Koepka, who's up there around 22-25-1 right now. Koepka and Finau are two guys I've got some interest in. But, you know, when you're betting golf, I don't bet favorites at single-digit odds, so I got to find somebody beyond Scheffler on the odds board here.
Fair enough. Hey, I like the picks. Appreciate you taking the time, Matt, and have a good one.
Okay, you bet. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
There is Matt Heumann, senior editor at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, and host of VSiN Tonight.
Tony Finau.
Tony Finau. It feels like Finau, he's one of the guys who, like, he's more of a name brand guy. I think casual sports fans would know about him, but he hasn't had the major success that I think people maybe thought he might have. I'd be happy to see him win.
Me too.
For him. On a personal level, he seems nice.
Mm-hmm.
Watched him in a full swing.
See, I wasn't taken away by that doc. Maybe no. I'm just not into golf as much as others. I didn't think it was as good as the tennis one or the Formula One.
I didn't watch the tennis one, but I'm also not a tennis guy. So
I just wanted to hop on what we were talking about there about the women's game. I think the WNBA is about to gain massively.
That's what
by
I was thinking.
Caitlin Clark's edition.
Mm-hmm.
Like, imagine for a moment next year's NBA All-Star game. You have Stephen Curry, name another player, and then you have Sabrina with Caitlin in that three-point shooting contest,
mm-hmm.
Forget about it.
Yeah, it'd be great.
It'd be so good.
I did. That's one thing, like Matt was saying, like, hey, there's going to be a regression in the women's college basketball viewership.
But I think it's a boon for WNBA viewership.
The WNBA is probably like pumped that they're getting Caitlin Clark in and a few others. Like, it's a big draft class for them. I think it's going to do a lot of big things. And it just goes to show, like, If you can have enough consistency in a league like the WNBA and it can eventually grow, you're going to get players like this, and you're eventually going to have people that do bring in major audiences. And hey, maybe we see that in women's hockey eventually too, but need to see more consistency.
I will say so this is the great thing about the NCAA is that the girls or the women they can't go to the NBA draft until they're 21, I believe. I think they qualify for the WNBA draft.
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong on that, but I'm pretty sure. It gives your league, the NCAA women's basketball, it gives them an opportunity to build a name brand and stars within their organization. So they have that going for them. For example, the rivalry between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark, 100% attributed to the, or like contributed to the interest in women's basketball.
For sure.
It was phenomenal. You had the rivalry, you had the good guy versus the bad guy. Like,
and that'll probably carry over into the WNBA.
Into the WNBA. So women's basketball in college, they need to jump on that. They need to recreate that the best they can. But also, the transfer portal. I love the transfer portal because it gives you an opportunity to build these super teams in college where these college athletes can go to whatever school they want. They're not held by the old rules of the NCAA where you have to sit out a year. Mm-hmm. So you have the ability to build these name brand teams in college basketball that generate more interest, because what drives interest and viewership and eyes? Star power.
And just to put that in numbers, so last year the average viewership for the women's national championship, 9.9 million. Mm-hmm. This year was 18.7 million. Yeah. So more than double, or almost more than double this year. Insane. Keep those texts coming in, 650, 650, Dunbar Lumber text line.
Just want to thank everybody for their ice cream machine submissions. I now understand why.
I described it to you in the break.
Yeah.
Well, explained it a little bit more. And we got some good texts.
Listen, you did too, but you know, we got to give credit to the texters. They put in work.
They got
to. Apparently, you have to clean the machine and refill the machine with ice cream, which takes upwards of 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
I would say like an hour and a half, 2 hours. It's a timely process that happens every day. Yeah. So don't get mad at your local McDonald's employees. Get mad at the system.
Yeah.
That doesn't
have two McFlurry machines.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and have two ice cream machines.
If I go to Dairy Queen.
What are we doing?
If I go to Dairy Queen.
Yeah. Okay. Come on. That's their bread and butter.
There's
you're not going to McDonald's and they're like, sorry, we don't have Big Macs. We don't have fries right now.
Well,
you go to Dairy Queen. If they're like, hey, we don't have ice cream.
It's like what you do.
Yeah.
That's McFlurries are what McDonald's does.
No, it's a part of what they do. But they're a complete game. They're at the top of the game. Come on. 650, 650. Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep those texts coming in. It is the People's Show. Josh Elliott Wolf, Dominic Tremadi. And tonight, it's the Vancouver Canucks and the Vegas Golden Knights at Rogers Arena.
What's your level of confidence in the Canucks tonight?
3.
10 being really good confidence. 10 being good. And then, yeah.
1 not being great. It's so hard as well because...
Canucks are betting favorites.
Are they?
Yeah.
I guess it's a home game.
Yeah, but...
Still, recent performance you thought would influence that a little bit more.
Yeah, you cannot convince me. Minus 120.
It's hard to be confident in anything they're doing right now. I still do think, though, we look at it, and if the special teams are better...
Mm-hmm.
That's where my confidence can grow exponentially. Like, if they somehow shore up their power play situation before the playoffs start, then I'm heading into that first round, and I believe that they are a team that can do something.
In that vein, we're kind of in that spot now where it's too late to cede control of the power play to someone else.
Like, you think Connor Garland has to start there?
No. I'm saying, who runs the power play?
Oh, yeah, but I don't think that was ever in question. At least, like... Not this year. Even a month ago when the power play was still struggling, there was never going to be a conversation of like, should someone else be running the top power play unit? It's something that, especially if it contributes to their downfall in the playoffs, then I can see that conversation coming up in the summer and being like, hey, you got to hire a guy who's dedicated to the power play.
This is the thing that I keep saying. You every year, every chance you get when you go into the playoffs... or you have a season like this one, you have a finite amount of chances with the group that you have to go on runs and to just say, brush it off as, we'll fix the power play next year. If we can't fix it this year, you are wasting an opportunity.
Yeah, but it's too late to fix it this year.
I know, that's a problem.
Yeah, but...
We've known this has been a problem for a long time.
What are you going to do when it's your head coach that runs the top power play?
Well, he should have the wherewithal to bring someone else in if it's not working. Fresh eyes, Josh. Different perspectives.
I do wonder, because the Sedins have been said to have...
Input
on the second unit, and they do more of that. I do wonder if he ever went to the Sedins and was like, hey, can we try to figure something out with the top power play unit? And... sometimes you can have as many eyes, you can have as many hands involved as you want. Sometimes it's just not going to work. And it's not a coaching issue, it's a confidence issue, whatever it is. It's hard to pinpoint what it comes down to. I keep coming back to like, there's so much talent on that top unit that it should figure itself out regardless of who the coach is.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it comes back to a confidence issue. And they're just like, do they look comfortable out there right now?
No.
Not really. And I don't think a coach can be like, hey, guys, don't worry about it.
It's Pettersson's
confidence.
Fault.
Everything's Pettersson's fault to you, though. Everything is Elias Pettersson's fault to Dominic Tremadi. 650.
That's terrible.
That's terrible. 650, 650. Dunbar Lumber text line. Let's read a few texts before we go to break. So earlier in the show, we were talking a bit about
LeBron James. No, I'm just kidding.
We were not talking about LeBron James. We were talking a bit about, hey, like Arizona, where are they going to go?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that they are going to be playing in Arizona next season?
Yes.
Really? At Mullet Arena?
Yes.
Salt Lake City sitting there waiting, licking their chops?
Dude, I know, but this is the NHL. This is Gary Bettman.
But here, the other part.
I refuse to set myself up for disappointment.
We're also going to know by June, or end of June, I guess, if they got the land or not. And if they get the land, then they're definitely playing in Arizona next season. If not, I think we see them in Salt Lake City. Someone also said, relocate Arizona to Surrey. There's so many Coyotes fans here. It's crazy. Plus, they are going to build a huge arena in Surrey. 100,000 people, man.
No.
100,000 people.
Doug McCallum's no longer the mayor, so that's not happening anymore.
Ah, nuts.
Could you imagine?
100,000 seat
stadium. No, it was a 60,000 seat stadium.
Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew it was a stupid number, so I just jumped to
for a hockey team.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
Insane.
Where would you put it?
That'd be too big for a football team.
Would you put it down near the Scott Road Station? Is that where you would put it? Right up against
probably
the water?
Not. Probably not. I guess. You got to put it on the water somewhere.
Like right up against the Fraser?
Yeah. I don't know.
That's the only place I can think in Surrey. Or like out in the
I
boonies.
Mean, realistically, you can just like demolish something in Surrey. There's a lot of old buildings.
I guess
that you
so,
can,
yeah.
You could take down whatever. I don't. They would make it work. It's
that
not
park.
Happening.
Who needs it?
It's not happening anymore. Yeah, put it right in. What's the park near Surrey Central? I live right near it.
You should
Holland
know this.
Holland Park.
Sat and Reach are gonna get mad at us, so you might as well.
Dan Riccio isn't here today, by the way. Dan Riccio out sick, but Canuck Central is coming up next. Satyar Shah, Israel Fair, coming to you live from Rogers Arena on the show. Don Taylor and Elliot Friedman. You know him, Dom. He's going to be on the show.
Yeah, I put him on your show today.
Yeah, I appreciate it. He's going to join the guys in the booth at Rogers
Arena. Download
32
Thoughts.
Appreciate everyone listening, everyone texting in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. Thanks to Victor Gaucher producing the show. Thanks to Dom Tramati co-hosting. I have been Josh Elliott-Wolf. This has been The People Show on Sportsnet 650.